Hello, everybody. This is Stu Smith, and we have Pat Bonus here with us again for the Tactical Fitness Report. And Patrick is out of Connecticut. He's one of our Heroes of Tomorrow trainers. So if you go on to the StuSmith.com website, you'll see a bright red free workouts link at the top. You click that, scroll down, you'll be able to contact Patrick if you're up in the Connecticut area and looking for workouts. And he's preparing a lot of guys for military, law enforcement, special ops, programming. So he's really smart trainer. He teaches physiology. In fact, he's going to teach us some physiology and a little bit of psychology mixed in with it today. So today we're going to talk about, I guess for lack of a better term, I guess we could call this a little bit of mental toughness, some mental training, what's happening with the mind-body connection whenever you go through really challenging events or days or weeks or even longer. I'm going to bring Hell Week up, in this presentation, because I remember as I went through Hell Week, and I'd never want to come across like this is easy, because, it's 120 straight hours of constant moving and it kicks your ass. But it is one of those things that, when I was done with it, I realized my body was 10 times stronger than my mind would let it be. Right. And I didn't really know what that meant. Yeah. And I really wasn't quite sure how to explain that. Was it a mind over matter type of thing? Was it, was I actually using my brain to get through this thing, or was I completely dissociating my brain and just focusing on what my body was doing or the moment right there and not getting too involved with, worrying about the pain that's occurring, right? Almost like I said, dissociating the pain. So, I'm always interested in hearing like what's going on scientifically, and Patrick is a great guy to discuss that. So let's hear about, what you do when you're teaching your students, whether it's physiology class or you're training them, and you're training them in this mindset that you and I have discussed. And I thought it was a good enough discussion that we put it on and make a videotape of this and share it with everybody.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Every year I start off in physiology, and you can't help but start to talk about energy and matter. And when you talk about energy, like I've said time and time again, it sounds a little quacky because it's weightless. It has no mass. How do you measure it? And so we start to talk about the Venn diagram of the human organ systems, that no one outweighs the other, really. They need to work together. They need to work in conjunction with each other. And so we start to talk about if one is, imbalanced or not effective, one can be impacted, and vice versa. So we start to talk about, well, how is energy measured? Well, it's measured by how it moves matter, and we are made of matter. And so in looking at the way that I train individuals is that I start to get into this positive psychology, which is defined. It has its own practitioners or, people who are far more advanced in the terms of psychology. But how can you put an internal dialogue of positive talk to get your body to do something? And then you talked about disassociation and I think anybody who plays, let's say, hockey, there are people who have never skated in their life. They can't skate. They look at it as this amazing feat because it's on a slippery surface. They're on this tiny little blade, and they're also coordinating many other movements. And many people who've been playing hockey for a long period of time are like, I don't know how to do it.
I don't know how to explain how I do it. I just do it. Yeah,
exactly. And I think there goes levels of, like when you're completely unconscious doing the activity, you're so good at it, you're unconscious doing it.
It's like trying to explain breathing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's exactly.
How do you breathe?
Right. And that's, and that's another thing, your heart beats intrinsically. You don't tell it to beat. It increases and it decreases, based on how much impact you kind of put on your body, or you put mentally. Your heart rate increases if you have mental stress, or even positive emotion. If you're you're really excited about something, your heart rate can increase in a good way. In a negative way, it can do the same. But you know, that's where I think it leads into this discussion from positive psychology. I learned this from a really good kind of sage of cycling years ago, that when you're doing a hill race, around here, we live in the Litchfield Hills, so there's a lot of steep hills. And you can look at it in one of two ways in your mind. If you have seven hills to climb, after you've gotten over the first one, you can say, I got six more to climb. Or you can say, I only have six more to climb.
Right.
And if you can really program that, right, that real sense of positive talk, then you're in the right direction. So the reason why I wanted to bring it up is because I've worked with guys and I've seen them increase their push-ups, their pull-ups, their run times, their swim times. And I think you have to pull out the mental training as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because here's the deal. When you're going through any of these programs, there's going to be a section of this training where you are receiving a lot of negative feedback from the instructors. Now, being able to handle negative feedback requires a lot of positive self-talk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, it really does.
Yeah. And I think that that's where when flow, you know, the term of it, it's where he kind of defined where you're in that, you've come into that, you're transcending so many different levels of thought and, you know, things that are coming to you. It's one of the components where you know what you're doing needs to be done, regardless of what anybody else is telling you, you know, or whatever. And then there's another one where there is this sense of knowing that you can do it regardless, right? So there's this inner clarity that you know it needs to be done. And then there's another level, the next component, he says, where you know that it's possible, no matter what. No matter how hard it is, no matter how hard the struggle is. And I've talked, I talked the other day in my leadership group. I said, do you think that like 95% of the people who run marathons run it to win it? Or do they run it to complete it? Right? And so in comes that, I'm sure there's a lot of negative talk going on in marathon runners' minds.
Sure.
And there's a lot of positive talk going on in marathon runners'
minds.
You know, where like, you know, oh, I got a water break in a mile. I get to take in some water. Or, oh, five more minutes and I get my glucose. You know, oh, that's going to taste so good. And so, you know, I think that when you start to get into the idea of flow, you also have to take into account that out of body kind of like, it just happened. I must have blacked out or something.
Right.
Doesn't come immediately. You know, and the founder of the idea and the principle said that many people who experience that high level of flow have been doing it for 10 years, 5 years. And that harkens back to you talking about people who are going to need a year before they can try and get a ship date.
Right.
You know, that there has to, you can't just go unconscious because of, you know, some metaphysical, you know, thing coming together and clicking, you know, on the first day.
You have to prepare, you know, that's all part of our preparation programming. You know, it takes time, you know, it takes times to get into that magic moment that you're talking about. And, you know, a lot of that comes with, you know, you prepare yourself for so long, you start building confidence, you are now, you know, more confident in your abilities. Your abilities are better than, you know, when you started, obviously. And then that moves into, all right, I can do this. All right. Yeah. You know, I'm hanging with everybody else. You know, I can do this, you know, and there is a moment when you're going through training that it clicks like that. Like I'm in the right spot. You know, I can do this. And then that's a really big moment for you. And you won't get that if you're not, you know, preparing yourself now for it, because there's nothing, you know, at SEAL training or any of these trainings that prepare you for what you are going through. You know what I mean? I mean, the learning curve is steep, and you got to jump on that road to start learning this stuff immediately and maintaining a standard that is set high for a reason. You know, so, you know, you can't go in there with mediocre standards. I mean, when you mentioned that marathon, I ran one, and, you know, I realized then that my mindset was not the same as this guy that I saw warming up, you know, probably from Kenya. You know, his mindset was set at, he had no doubt he was going to finish this race. You know, yep. That wasn't a question. His goal was see if he could pick up his pace and drop a minute off of his best time. Yep. Whereas mine, first time ever running one, and last time, was, am I going to finish this thing? I want to try to get it in under 4 hours. So my standard in my mind was set a lot lower than his. And that's where I came up with that saying, train to compete, not just survive. Because I was in survival mode then.
Sure.
I was in survival mode just to pass. Right. And where I see a lot of people screw up at SEAL training, and in any training really for that matter, is they go there trying to survive and strive for the minimum standard to pass. Does that make sense? So you got to train yourself and be able to prepare yourself, not to just get those minimum standards on the PST to get two buds, but surpass those and crush that thing. You could take it twice and still it not bother you, and you can still go work out again. I mean, that's the kind of level of fitness you got to have to prepare yourself for this type of training. And you don't get there unless you put time in the saddle doing it.
I couldn't agree more, because we talked about it, I think, even in the last conversation we had or the podcast we did, where I had a kid who was like, well, I can get the standard. And I was like, that's not what they want to see. And it came back on him. He got delayed on his ship date because the spec ops recruiter said, I wanted to see 11 and you did 10. And that's what he wanted to see. So I couldn't agree with you more. I think that there does, in when they talk about flow, there is a level of, it is reality based too. So, you know, your first marathon, there has to be a level of survival thought. I got to get through it. Sure. I got to complete it. I got to finish it. But just like we said, that years come through practice, the years and the years and the years of practice, your second marathon, there should be that mindset of, wow, I've done this. I know I can do it. Now I want to shave off some minutes. I want to shave off some seconds.
Absolutely. You know,
and that's what, for me, with bike racing, I was training with a true, at the last step of flow, that true intrinsic value. For me, cycling was drop weight and not get cardiovascular disease. That's like, that, you know, my dad was suffering with that. So that was a big deal for me. I wanted to drop weight in a healthy way, right? And so it was driving me. It was getting me out. It was disciplining me. Then I lost going up a hill. I was going up behind some old guy, right, who was a really good cyclist, and he beat me. No matter what I did, I couldn't beat him. And so that triggered something. So I started training a little harder. I needed that experience. I started training harder. And then another friend of mine was like, oh, you should do a bike race. It's like, oh, I don't know how to do that. Mm. And then I go into the bike race, and I don't win, but I had a great experience. The next race, I wanted to do better, and so forth and so on. And then that came down. But it started off with this real, from the way that Flo talks about, and it gets negative press. But I think you talk about it too, is that real focus on what you want to do.
Yeah, why does flow get negative press? I've heard the term flow before, and I've kind of, be honest with you, I've kind of just disregarded it as like almost like a cliche, trendy term for, just putting out. So what is it exactly?
Okay, well, I don't think flow gets a ton of negative press, but I do think at times neuro-linguistic programming does.
Oh, okay, yeah, I got you.
And I think that's because there was I don't want to go into the,
like, a snake oil type salesman.
It costs a lot of money. There's practitioners, there's gurus, it can cure disease. They should have never said that.
Right.
Flow has never said, and anything I've read, that it can cure disease.
Right.
It never says anything about you're going to become this superstar athlete or anything like that.
Right. I guess the method for flow, I guess the process is really more focused on better performance. Right.
Absolutely. And if you want to get to that level, you have to be conscious of what's going on.
Okay.
So you have to know, and you have to reflect on it and you have to think about it. And so if you look up positive psychology, you know, it's a real psychological practice. And if you look under it and you click on flow and you start to read about it, what you're going to find is the genesis of flow was the Hungarian founder saw that people, he was like 7 or 8 years old. He started to observe people from World War II couldn't see the world in a positive way. They were struggling to find positivity in the world.
Hmm.
So that's, and neuro-linguistic programming has also been used to treat PTSD, excuse me. And so, so they're trying to take negative experiences and making them positive, right?
Right.
Looking at the world in a positive way. But flow is really when you start to get into that mindset. And the reason why the hyper-focused, the first step of being hyper-focused on something has gotten negative press is because people don't look at it in really what it means. If you want to go to Buds, but you have a job, you still go to your job.
Yeah.
But you do an hour workout in the morning and you do an hour workout at night. You're still focused on your goal. You're hyper-focused on your goal, but you're maintaining everything else in your life.
Right.
So it actually might even increase your focus because you have to balance more things.
Oh yeah. I tell you what, man, when I got to Buds, I remember after finishing the first few days of Buds, you know, events, and I remember when the day was over, I was like, I don't have to go work out right now. You know, I don't have homework to do. I don't have a job to do, you know, I don't have to go stand duty or, you know, my day was done. And, I just remember that was like, that was a big moment for me to realize that, you know, all the stuff that I was juggling prior to Buds to get to Buds, you know, and topping off sports and working out and everything else, studying, you know, I was in college before I went, you know, so I didn't have to do that anymore. My day was done. And that was a great feeling, by the way.
Well, and did the day go by fast?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he talks about that timelessness that occurs too.
Okay.
When you're really doing and you're really into something and like everything's clicking or conversation or anything or the studying or you're jamming, you kind of like, whoa. And we've all been there where like, whoa, oh, it's 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, whoa. Like I'm done. Where did the time go? And that's also what he talks about. And it's not, you're not always conscious of flow while it's occurring.
Sure.
It's that I think a key element which people need to talk about is that reflective process.
Well, yeah, it's internal awareness. You know, yeah. I call it internal awareness. And, you know, as a, you know, when you go through military special ops type training, you get taught external awareness a lot, you know, attention to detail, you know, everything that's around you. What are you hearing? What are you seeing? What are you feeling? What are you tasting? I mean, everything that just kind of comes into your senses is helping you make a decision of what you're going to do, where you're going to go, how you're going to do it, and all those things. However, you also have to have some internal awareness and understand what's going on physiologically, psychologically at that same time, right? Like what's your heart rate doing right now? You know, do you need to take a couple big deep breaths to engage that thinking part of your brain because you're starting to get a little frazzled? You know, you're not really thinking clearly. You know, all of those things are really critical in the process of it. And I think you can, as long as you're having some internal, external awareness discussion going on in your head, you can really kind of tap into driving yourself into that performance model that you're talking about, you know, with flow.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there is that component of when you have that awareness, you have the awareness too, when it doesn't go right. You know, like, oh, I didn't have a training session. My mind wasn't there. and I can't, this example, I'm sure they're everywhere. And it's only one that you know, kind of came to my doorstep, because one of the kids I was training was in a program with a kid who shipped out to Buds. And this kid was, he was a stud. He was, his run times, swim times, everything were amazing. He got out to Buds, and I saw, or texted with a kid, you know, a couple weeks later. He's like, yeah, he dropped out. And I said, well, why? You know, what happened? And he's like, he had a fiance when he went in, and he decided he wanted to, you know, and I'm not knocking him, but that right there was obviously a mental component that was pulling him away from where he really needed to focus at that time. And we've had other situations. We've had, you know, death in the family, and how do you go about that? How do you mentally handle that? And that gentleman from Caltech that I spoke to, we went on a walk, and I found out when he was at Caltech, he lost his father and they gave him 2 weeks. That was it. 2 weeks to go home, to grieve, to do the burial process, the funeral process. And then he had to get back at it.
And he was a student at the time?
He was a student at the time.
All right.
And I had a conversation. I was like, wow, you're way more mentally tough than I ever thought you were. Like, I said, I know you're a genius, but I didn't realize that you were that tough. And he's like, yeah, that was a really hard time in my life. But I didn't have an option. I had to do it. And, you know, his goal was get through Caltech and reach that standard well. And he knew in a way that his father wouldn't want him to quit. And so he had that mental component of how he could deal and grieve. And so those situations come to us all. And there are those people who can work through it and know that their goal, their intrinsic core value, it has no reward. They're not doing it for any reward. They're not doing it for any money, power, level of esteem. And so that's what drives them. And so they know too, that if they have a fiance or if their father passes away, their father is looking down on them in a positive light and helping drive them. Or they're looking at the woman who knows that I love this person for that drive, for that commitment. And so there's that internal dialogue that they're not going to quit, because they know that, you know, in that last step of flow, they're reflecting on, I am doing this for all the right reasons. And in fairness, is if you step away and you're pulled away from some of those things, you probably know you weren't doing it for the right reasons in the first place. You might've been doing it because it's cool,
yeah,
you know, or because, you know, you're going to have, a good pension, or, you know, when you get out, or whatever it may be, or because society deems it, a cool thing or a cool endeavor, or there's pressures to get to a certain level. And then you realize that, you know, as we've spoke about, I've seen many priests come and speak, and they were not, you know, priests at first. They were stockbrokers. They were doctors, they were lawyers, and they found that it just didn't have an intrinsic value to them. Hmm. And that, you know, becoming a priest really, pulled that value, you know. Right. But going back to positive psychology, that's where you have to, you know, like I said, and I'm not trying to cast judgment on those people of why they, you know, why they quit or why they succeeded or anything like that. That's not the point. But that internal dialogue of positive psychology is, like you said, you're going to get a lot of negative feedback. How do you internally, like in positive psychology, how do you focus on your strengths and your virtues and your values? Like, how do you internally know that I don't care what this person says, I know I'm going to get through this. I know I'm going to do it. I know I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah. I will say this. I remember when it occurred to me that I was doing well as a student, was when the instructors started just talking to you, you know, as a human, right? And then getting into your head that way, right? Versus trying to push up you to death. When they realized they couldn't break you with push-ups or running or whatever, then the next game is, oh yeah, Smith, you got a girlfriend? Yeah, I used to have a girlfriend. Yeah, I used to be married. You know, and yeah, you know, there are conversations like that that occur that probably was very similar to what happened to your previous student there that was a stud physically, you know, but then you get into your head of this, yeah, wow, man, that's going to be tough being away 9 months a year. And, you know, do I really want to do this, you know, and how am I going to have a family with this? And, you know, and you start thinking about all these things. And, you know, be honest with you, you just have to say, you know what, I'm going to get through this first and figure it out.
Right.
Because, well, there are great people that, you know, make it through 20, 30 years of being a SEAL and have super strong families, you know, and their kids are exceptional, two or three languages. And I mean, just they've traveled yeah. everywhere. I mean, they're just such yeah. cool families. So,
well, and I think that, you know, you, as you just stated, part of flow is you have to be in the situation. You know, I talk to all my students. One of the hardest things to do is be in the situation with all the things that teenagers have to deal with: college commitments, girlfriends, you know, coaches, you know, exams, whatever. And so how do you, when you're in that moment, I think the best people, and I can't, you know, and I can't speak to getting through something like SEALs. I just can't. There's nothing. And I think that's also why your community is so strong, is because you have that real experience of working through a similar challenge together, but you also learn how to be in the situation. Each day is its own day. Each right. PT session is its own PT session. You don't want to, you know, look behind you and think about, you know, how bad it was earlier or what you didn't do well at earlier. And you don't want to look at what's coming up, what's on the horizon to stress you out. You have to be in that situation. You have to, you know, as the Stoic philosopher said, kind of try to eliminate those externals. Those yeah. externals that are negatively impacting you, and focus on the situation. And that's too where flow comes in, is not only this heightened sense of focus, but this heightened situational awareness.
Right.
That you can't, there's nothing, you know, I tell kids, when you're playing hockey, there is no phone call you can make. There is no, you know, there's no date you can be on. You have to be in that for 45 minutes to an hour. That's what you have to handle. And so that mental component too, you know, about being in the situation is very, very important. And I think that neuro-linguistic programming, as we said, it gets a little bit of negative press and then it costs a lot of money. But if you can take those experiences, you know, from the senses or anything like that, and start to realize where they went well and where they went wrong, you can start to allow them to go right for you.
Right.
So it's taking the nervous system and having an internal dialogue on how you can effectively perform on so many different levels, right? And so it talks about, you know, in the last aspect of it, learning. You have to learn from those experiences. You have to learn, you know, like we said, from where it went well and where it went wrong.
Right. So. Let's take it from the beginning, if you don't mind. Like, when you have a kid that you're training and you see that he's really starting to handle the physical standards really well, what are some things that you do as a coach to start implementing some of the mental side of training?
I do a little teasing.
Yeah.
So, you know, like we'll do a zero dark boat evolution, for example. And if a kid shows up late, I'm going to be like, you're a mess. You're a disaster. Like, I can't replicate the instructor, like,
yeah, sure,
punishing sure. them. Right.
Right.
And so, but I test them. I test their integrity. If they're there, like, or if they commit to something, they have to be there. And if they're not there, we poke fun at them a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
And I
just see if you can get under their skin a little bit.
Exactly.
And how they handle that.
But make them question themselves.
Right.
So when my first Air Force guy, when we did a run, swim, ruck, he wasn't coming back. So I went out to get him. I'm like, where is this guy? And he was walking. And we've reminded him of his first ruck when he walked. I had a Navy diver and a SEAL candidate in an open water swim, and they were buddy swimming, and they got picked up by a boat. And I will text them every once in a while. I said, never get on the boat again. And that was, you know, and that's a big deal. Like, Drew and I finished And we're like, we're rocking back, and where are these guys? And they're already, they didn't pass us in the water. And I'm like, so again, I'm like, you guys got on the boat. Like, you never forget, you never get on a boat again. And I subtly remind them of those times where they failed.
Yeah, you know what? That's a really good point, because Jeff and I did a podcast the other day about failing, right? And coming back stronger from failing. Mm-hmm. You know what? Never wanting to fail again type right. of thing. You know, because there is a feeling that you get when you fail or when you quit, right? When you quit something, there is a feeling that you get, and you can do one of two things. You can get used to that feeling and keep doing it, or you can remember this feeling and never freaking do it again.
Well, you're a parent, right?
Yes.
And as a parent, your kids make mistakes.
Sure.
And the number one thing you want your kid, they can't undo what they've done, right? But the worst thing is if the kid's apathetic. Sure. Nah, I don't care. And that's the worst thing in training. If you don't care that you failed,
yeah,
then you're probably going to replicate it and you're going to continue to fail. Mm-hmm. And so in when he's talking about flow, apathy is the hardest space to get to flow from.
Okay.
So if you, that's
he, now we're talking. Yeah.
Yep. You know, he said the hardest place, you know, to come from, to get to flow, is apathy. So you know, leading into that conversation about how do you feel? And so when I do the mental training, I make fun of them. You know, I let them know a kid wanted to wrestle me. He's been boxing with his dad and he beat his dad. And so the dad, you know, gave me his blessing, I guess. And so, you know, I study Krav Maga and have in the past. And so there's a totally different philosophy there. Right. And he was pushing and pushing. He was the aggressor. So I let him push, like in Aikido, I let him take control of it. And at any rate, when he didn't beat me and knock me out as I think he wanted to do, I reminded him. And the point is that if he beat me, I'd never be able to live with myself.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, and so it's like, it's a no-win situation. If you,
right.
Kid,
yeah.
You know, you beat a kid, you're the grown up, and you know, you should be stronger and older. And if you lose, you're never going to be able to walk around with your head high. But he, you know, he learned, and I reminded him that you were too aggressive. You were not feeling the situation. And I reminded him of his failure. But remember that there's always someone bigger, stronger, faster, smarter than you. And so within flow, there is a reality base of you do what you can do and you do it well and know that you can handle the situation. So if you get excited, you know, if you're excited or if you're emotional, those are actually, you know, if you're really excited over something, that's a real easy way to move into flow. If you leave a workout and you're like, that was awesome, I got my butt kicked, you're closer to getting to flow in those situations.
Yeah, and, I gotcha.
You know, and I think that mental training is a huge component of like what we talked about. I sent you that that quote from Dorothy Parker that it seems negative, but the other day I was really sore getting into the pool because I had done dips. So I get real sore right here after dips.
Sure.
And, you know, my shoulder mobility and swimming hurts. But I use the – I sometimes hate training, but I love having trained idea because I knew after my swim, the blood would be in the muscles.
Be a little more pliable, less sore.
My shoulders would feel better. And so in a way, standing on the edge of the pool, my mind guided my body. But I would only know that through experience.
Right.
I've been there before.
You will only know. Yeah, that's why when I made that comment to you, when I said I realized my body was 10 times stronger than my mind would let it be, you know, I at first thought, yeah, it's all, you know, mind over matter. You know, it's just if you don't mind, it doesn't matter type of thing. But really, it is, you know, even though you're saying that you're dissociating, or I'm saying that I'm dissociating my brain from my body and the pain, that is a mental process.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So,
100%.
You know, even though I say my body is 10 times stronger than my brain will let it be, my brain is letting me think that, you know, and letting me do that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, and it turns around on itself and it becomes, it's all mental.
Yeah.
It even though I am kind of dissociating my thinking part and my feeling part of the brain, you know, my brain is allowing me to do that.
Yeah. And your brain got you to that point.
Yeah. And you know, using that prior experience, build some confidence. I can do this. I can go into that zone pretty easily. Like I did it this morning. We had a really hard workout. One of our guys' last days before he ships, and it was just a, you know, butt kicking Friday workout. But I remember being in the zone. I was in the zone when I was running. I was in the zone when I was swimming. Time was just standing still. You know, yep. There was nothing going on. My breathing was perfect. I was internal awareness of everything that was happening. And I knew that I'm like, wow, I'm doing really well right now. You know, this is really good, you know, yeah. But there are days when I'm like trudging along, you know, same workout, you know, trudging along with a little bit less energy. And I'm, you know, and I swear I can't figure it out. You know,
well, so, I mean, well, and that's the unconscious part of, you don't know why you did it. That's that unconscious part of the body, but they're reflecting on it. You could be like, well, Thursday I had a podcast.
Exactly.
I had articles to do. I had to pick my kid up, but I had so many things going on that right. I just had to get through the workout. Whereas Friday you were like, I scheduled this time out for this kid's last day. I'm going to make it special.
Yeah. You know what? That's part of it. Had a good night's sleep. Had good food at night the night before, plenty of energy for breakfast before I, you know, went out there. So yeah, all of that comes into play. And now, if you want to get back to that performance zone, let's say you had a great performance, right? Like today, I may even give it a name, right? I give that performance a name, like
yeah,
going away party, right? So if I want to call up that same type of energy, I'm going to, next time I go do a workout, I'm going to say, we're going to do this just like that going away party.
Right. Right?
Kind of call it up. And I think they call it in psychology, a performance cue.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that term?
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Given your performance a name and calling it up. It's kind of like, you know, when you're a baseball player and you hit a home run and you remember that feeling, it's a walk-off home run. You win the game, you know, last inning. You know, yep. you're hitting that home plate and you just take in every moment that, you know, every bit of that, what the crowd's doing, what your buddies are doing, how you're feeling, and you give it a name.
Well, and that feeling is what the psychologist deems as flow.
Right.
But it all comes together. And in the moment, you can't explain it. Yeah. And I think that's the reflective process of all the things you talked about that went into making your going away party good.
Yeah.
And that's where I, you know, I think there should be one step at the end that he, you know, in terms of his components, I'm not going to tell this guy what, right.
He needs
to do, but yeah. In leadership, I want reflection. I want, what did you guys experience when you started it? You hated it. What took place as your buddy carrying up the hill? Yeah. You know, like there's a lot of mental, talk that changes. Right.
Yeah.
And we reflect and we point out negative aspects and we point out positive aspects. And so I start to, in leadership, I start to get into, there's no negative or positive. It's just truthful reinforcement. I'm just telling you what we need to do. It's not yeah. negative or positive. This is what we need to do. But that home run, you know, they're going to talk about, you guys are going to talk about, I don't know. I could feel the breeze on my forearm hairs. I could see, you know, the stitches in the ball, yep. Right? I could, yep. You know, I could, it's, and so that's what basically he's saying is there is a real thing, and that real thing is flow. And there's right. seven components to it: being completely focused, having a sense of ecstasy, a greater inner clarity, knowing that it can be done, a sense of serenity, being engrossed in the situation where you lose your ego. And then again, that intrinsic core value, those are the steps, and all of those kind of come together. And I would think, in fairness, all the good sleep, the good nutrition, but that intrinsic core value that you had to send this guy off knowing that he's going into a situation, but he's got support going in. And that's, you know, he's got that support. He's got that send off. He's got a great group. I mean, that table was that picture you sent me, the table was full.
Oh yeah. Right? It was awesome. Yeah.
You know, and you could see the energy, thumbs up, let's go. And everyone is pulling for him. And yeah. So You know, there's a mental thing too, is that he knows he's got a lot of people that are supporting him in his endeavor. And it goes back to that, to Jeff Nichols talk about purpose. You know, if you have
that's a good TED talk. If you haven't seen that, you know, do a Google search on Jeff Nichols TED talk on purpose. It's really good.
I really loved it, because that's what I really want all my guys that I train to have. Is I'm not a recruiter. Yeah. But if you have that real drive to care more about someone else than yourself, and really, you know, help and care and make that ultimate sacrifice, then I think you'll never go wrong.
Absolutely. I mean, it comes like, what's your why?
Yeah.
You know, what is your why? And that's really a big part of flow, I think, too, you know, of getting into that state. I've never even used the term flow before, because I've never really thought about it. But I've been in that situation many, many times. And I just call it like optimal performance.
Uh-huh. You know,
it's really the same thing. You know, my optimal performance, I can pull back on a workout, like, you know, I've had over the years, and just say, yeah, I want to do that workout. I've done this workout before. I want to do it just like I did that day. I want to feel exactly the way I did afterwards. That's why, you know, whenever I wake up in the morning before, you know, 5:30, and, you know, I'm dragging, I'm, you know, just, I could stay in bed, you know, I could stay comfortable. Yep. Right. But I know every time that when I go and I make a decision to go to do these workouts and go do this, and I've been doing it for 30 years now, I will always feel better when I'm done.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I'm always going to feel better when I'm done. That gets me from groggy and wanting to stay comfortable and stay in bed and hit the snooze button to up and at 'em. Let's go do it. And I'm going to feel 10 times better whenever I'm done with this, you know, workout. And I may not be into it at first, but then I get into it. It takes me some time to get into it. You know, you got to warm up into it. And, you know, I think that, you know, optimal performance or flow, whatever you call it, is a process of, you know, starting out cold, and you got to kind of both physically and mentally push yourself to getting into that state. And I've rarely seen it without both working together. Every now and then you can automatically go into that state just because your adrenaline just automatically pops up and you're ready to roll. You know, there are those type of moments, but very rarely is it, you know, when you're just training, does it just go together, or do they have to go together in order to make it? Yeah.
Yeah. And to be quite honest, I don't really use, I looked into flow. Like I told you, I've always deemed it as positive talk, a positive internal dialogue. When you're in a situation, you know, have perspective. You know, when I go to the pool and I see a guy who can't use his legs and he's swimming up and down the lane, I'm in that pool and I'm working twice as hard. And, you know, I'm knowing that, you know, I can do this.
No
and,
excuses. You
know, no, my, exactly. And my no. level, my level, may not be great, but there's people with, you know, far less doing far more. And, you know, things that seem negative can be real positive. The knowing that, you know, I don't want to do this, but I know that if I do it, I'll feel a lot better in the end. Like you said, that's that whole, sometimes I hate training, but I love having trained. I love going to the restaurant and getting food and, you know, sitting in the sun, or, you know, jumping in the water, cooling off after, you know, a grinder. And so I think that's where you allow the positivity to fuel you. And I think going back to that flow, neuro-linguistic programming, what it's trying to do is allow yourself to convince yourself that you can do things.
Right.
You know, that you can put the pieces together and have it work.
Well, I will tell you this, you know, when you're going through Hell Week and you start off in the first 30 minutes, that's where a lot of quitting occurs. Right. Not that it's necessarily hard. It's just, you can get really tired in 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, you could be exhausted in 30 minutes, but in your brain, you're thinking there's 120 hours or 119 and a half hours more of this that I have to do for the rest of the week. But you know, you have to reframe all of that too. And just say, you know what? Every 6 hours, I get to eat a meal.
Right.
You know, and you make it to the next meal. You know, yep. So you're taking 120 hours and dividing it by six, right? And now you're saying, all right, I have this many meals I get to do during this 120 hours.
Yeah.
Right? So, yep. And those are my little hour breaks that, you know, I can refuel, I can recharge and get warm, because you go to a cafeteria most of the times, you know, and, you know, it's a moment of peace.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing too, is like, be in that situation, enjoy the meal.
Yeah.
Right. Like, be in that situation. Like, I, you know, like, be so happy that you're getting to sit down and restore, replenish, and fuel for the next event. Like, really, you know, I don't want to get into the whole, like, give thanks for food. Right. But
right.
There is that level of, that's the situation at hand. And then, you know, and when you sleep too, know that sleep is the situation.
Yeah.
You know, so like, when you get to that bed, you know, take whatever you can at, you know, any point and be in that situation and be thankful for it. And just like you said, looking forward to, you know, one thing when we were doing hill repeats was at 45 minutes, I know I'm getting some sugar. Like, I can't wait till we get to 45 minutes. It wasn't like, right. Oh, when's 45 minutes going to come?
Right.
So, you know, you get that snack. But right. I think the reason is, I hope that everybody understands that, yeah, you can be, you know, a physical specimen and you can go and do certain workouts, but there has to be a mental component every single time. So you push yourself a little harder, or even, you know, when to scale it back a little, you know, that your mind is telling you, hey, back off a little bit, you know? But it's, I think that the reflective process, like you said, that you didn't really know it until you got through Hell Week. You didn't know what you were really doing when you were there.
No. Yeah. We didn't, I had never heard of any of these words before Hell Week,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And then after learning about them and learning about some physiology and learning about some psychology, I was like, oh yeah, I did this. I know exactly what this is.
Yeah.
You know, it's really cool. It's cool stuff. So
good.
Good. Yeah. I appreciate you chatting. You have anything else for closing? Any wise tips or quotes that you want to leave us with?
I sent you a couple quotes. You know, I write stuff all the time.
And, oh yeah. I know. That's why I asked.
well, I wrote, so anyone, you know, you mentioned Heroes of Tomorrow, and I want everyone to know, I wrote something. I wrote a quote that, because I like the outdoors and things like that. And I said, I like the mountain, seek no reward. My reward is you reaching the summit or enjoying the safety of my base. So you get where you want to get. You know that you have encouragement from so many people. You have so many opportunities to get to where you want to go. But also understand that if you're in it or you're out of it, you have safety in my compassion, my lack of judgment, and anything that I don't know, I will do my best to find someone who does for you. So I just want anyone to know that there is no, I think the reason why I'm so honored to be part of the Heroes of Tomorrow program is because of that intrinsic value of trying to help these people out that are, you know, making that ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Cool, man. Well, once again, I appreciate all your efforts in training young men and women who are seeking to serve their country or community, and your knowledge with, you know, some really neat stuff that, you know, it's hard to explain what it is, you know, but, you know, once you kind of get there, or maybe you've been there, but you never knew it, you might be able to apply some of what we just said to not just realizing you can do this, but also realizing you can call it up again and do it again. You know, there are some ways to do that, you know? So anyway, once again, I appreciate it. I think this was a great segment to have. And I guess my last question for you is, what do you think we should call this? Is this an optimal performance show? Is this getting in the flow? What title would you give this show? Because I'm horrible with titles, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm going to call this TFR 98 and then think of something else afterwards. You know.
Yeah, I would say you know, mental and physical performance. Mental and physical performance are, you know, the joining of mental and the merging of mental and physical performance.
Right. Yeah. Okay. There you go. The joining.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. The joining. Yeah. Or the merging.
But they gotta work together. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So.
All right. Cool, man. Well, thanks again. And everybody, if you got questions, just leave them in the discussion comment section. Also, I'll leave a link to our Heroes of Tomorrow training list where you can find Patrick as well. So,
thank you, Stu.
All right. Thank you.
All right.